Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where product managers become product masters. I would love to connect with you on LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn, just search for Chad McAllister, PhD, and send me a connection request, and I'll be glad to accept it from you. This episode is about virtual teams. So many of us have been part of virtual teams, and maybe we have felt at times that pain that it can be to work on a virtual team that's not going so well, or trying to lead one that's having some real struggles. And virtual teams are becoming more commonplace, right? Common in organizations, and especially in our roles as product managers and innovators, because product teams are increasingly getting scattered across the world and really geographically dispersed. I found someone who has worked with and learned from over hundreds of virtual teams. He is currently the Project Management Officer Manager, the PMO Manager at Cisco Systems, where he leads virtual teams all around the world. He's also the author of two Amazon best-selling books. The first one is Influencing Virtual Teams, 17 Tactics That Get Things Done with Your Remote Employees. His most recent book is Don't Reply All. Love that title. Don't Reply All. 18 Email Tactics That Help You Write Better Emails and Improve Communication with Your Team. His name is Hassan Osman. In the interview, we focus on the nature of virtual teams, building trust, and what you need to know about running an effective virtual team meeting. To get the summary and transcript of our discussion, head over to theeverydayinnovator.com/091. Enjoy the interview. Hi, Hassan. Thank you so much for being part of the Everyday Innovator podcast.
Hey, Chad. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
I'm looking forward to talking about virtual teams and learning from your good experience there. And let's dive into that topic. So we hear about the virtual teams a lot. I'm sure a lot of the everyday innovators listening have been on virtual teams. But let's just make sure we ground it. I like to make sure we know what terms mean and how we're using them. So describe a virtual team for us.
Sure. So a virtual team is simply a team that is spread across either time or physical location or both. Right. So when you think of a traditional virtual team, you're either thinking about different time zones, whether within the US or across the world, basically within physical location, either within the same state, but just different offices, or again, across different areas within the world as well. However, what I do want to say is that it would have been a lot easier to explain in a more clear-cut way what a virtual team is, maybe like 15, 20 years ago, when email and the internet was starting out, because it was a very clear delineation. However, today, I think a lot of people could argue that every single team is a virtual team. And let me give you an example of that. Let me tell you why I think that. So I have a friend of mine who's the CEO of a startup company here in Cambridge. They actually have an office in Harvard Square. And it's made up of a couple of big rooms. One is like a big conference room, and then the other is like a big open floor space where everyone's kind of sitting facing the wall. Actually, it's like a really big, cool space there. And I was asking him, I said, well, it must be really cool if you need to ask one of your team members to do something for you. You just swivel in your chair and yell it out. And he said, well, actually, no, I send them an email. And I found that a little bit intriguing. So I said, well, why do you do that? And he said, well, you know, it's easier for me to track. I have it written down somewhere. They have it written down somewhere, so they don't have to rely on the verbal aspect of it. And it's just easier for me to, you know, as opposed to kind of interrupting what they're doing. And so that tells you something. And that is that, you know, in a way, they're still using a virtual team component, and you cannot be more physically co-located than that. I mean, literally just a few feet away from you. So, you know, in a sense, even if you've got teams that work in the same floor space, different cubicles, you're still getting on a conference call and talking on that call without actually being physically located. So I really think the whole virtual team concept and definition is getting blurrier as we go forward, and that you don't really have something which is very solid to hang on to.
And those are really good points, that because the first thing that comes to my mind about virtual teams is they're geographically dislocated, right? They're not all in the same physical place. But that example points out that they can be right next to each other. And I've seen the same exact thing, right? Software groups that I've been part of before, you know, literally sitting right next to each other at the same table, maybe a cubicle divider between them, maybe not, but they'll have an IM window up for instant messaging or Slack or something. And that will be how they choose to communicate, even if they're asking their friend next to them a question, because that's kind of their typical mode to interact with the team. And they also don't feel like they're disrupting others maybe at the time, but that's just the default communication a lot of the time.
Exactly. And if you think about it, it doesn't matter if that person is in the next cubicle or 3,000 miles away.
Right.
The interaction is the same.
Yeah. And so if you have a team, which is more common, that you might be having, you know, work with six people right by you physically and also have developers over in India or manufacturing specialists in China and, you know, having to loop these people into a conversation. Okay.
Right.
So,
exactly.
So these aspects of geography is part of the equation, but you could be right next to each other and be interacting with each other maybe asynchronously some of the time, you know, disparate
right.
in time and trying to get deal with that.
Absolutely. Or different time zones, exactly.
Yeah, right. So time zones makes me think of issues, and because that's time zones are a key issue I ran into in having actual virtual teams and trying to interact with them. And we could talk about issues rest of our time together, but I really want to get on to some other topics too for our listeners. But what are kind of the top maybe two or three key issues that you've ran into just with virtual teams? What kinds of things should we be expecting?
Yeah, so there obviously are a lot of challenges with virtual teams. You know, a couple of them are, one is the lack of facial expressions and body language cues, right? I mean, obviously, when you're dealing with either asynchronous communication, such as IM or email, you're not getting that flavor of the nonverbal communication that that person is obviously trying to project. And so that usually results in a lot of miscommunication or misinterpretation of intent. And that could create conflict. It kind of adds to that. So that's a big thing. Obviously, now with technology, with using webcams, for example, it minimizes that a little bit. Another thing that really affects virtual teams is that lack of cohesion. So we as human beings are very social in nature. And with virtual teams, it could get very easily into the siloed, dry, and transactional mode of work where you're alone in your own little world doing your thing, and you're not having that interaction or level of interaction that you have with co-located physical teams. So, you know, that just brings up another layer of a big challenge for teams that, especially those that are starting out into this model, actually frown upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And speaking about body language, when you see me looking away, it's because I'm taking notes as we are talking too. So it's not that I'm ignoring what's going on. Cohesion's a key thing, because I know on virtual team meetings I've been in, I do probably make the mistake of, let's just jump into what we need to get done, right? Why are we having this phone call or this webinar or whatever the tools are, right? And forget that we don't have the kind of the random interactions that happen when you're working in the same office with other people, right? And those random interactions are actually often where you get to know people. And if you don't make time for that to occur in the virtual environment, it won't happen.
Absolutely. I mean, that's called the water cooler effect, right? It's there's a big lack of that whenever you're in a virtual team environment, because you don't get those random bumps that you meet someone in the hallway, coffee break room, or what have you. And that is a big thing. I mean, to a lot of people, it is important, because it makes you feel like you're part of a community. It's, you know, not just purely based on work. But you do have that social interaction, which does lack. So that's definitely one big challenge.
Yep, very good. When it comes to teams, characteristic that I focus on so much is trust. And when I think of virtual teams, and especially I like how you've helped me recenter my thinking to be thinking about not just teams that aren't co-located together, right? But they could certainly be. But trust is an element that takes place in any kind of team, right? If we're meeting face-to-face all the time, if we're only meeting virtual and we've never met in person before, trust is still a key thing that comes into play. Just talk through how you've seen trust kind of develop and maybe some suggestions for building trust in virtual teams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad you asked that question, because really trust is the number one reason for a lot of senior management for not going into that virtual team model, right? How can I trust people if I don't see them? And trust is a very nebulous concept. It's not like an on-on switch, on-off switch, where you either have trust or you don't have trust. It's more of a spectrum where there's varying degrees of trust among the team and among managers and their direct employees. So it becomes this very tough thing to manage, right? And because it's very tough to manage, it's very hard to kind of nail down. How do you define it? How do you actually increase it among your team? And in my own research, I've done a lot of kind of academic research in this space. And I know you and I talked a little bit before that, and you have some experience in that field as well. I was able to kind of come up with this very rudimentary, simple formula for trust. And that is, trust is equal to reliability plus likability. Meaning, if you want to increase trust among your team, you either have to increase reliability or increase likability, or both. And let me talk a little bit about what each of those mean. So with reliability, it's really the simple concept that can the person who has been given that job actually do that job, right? Do they have the proper skill set to actually accomplish what they need to accomplish? And there are a few ways in which you can increase that. You know, first is a simple one, which is just verifying that they indeed have both the communication skills, which are the soft skills to be able to deal in a virtual team environment, mm-hmm. Whether in writing or in speaking. And then your technical skills, which are obviously the skills needed to do the job itself, whether you know it's project management or engineering or product development or what have you. And making sure that those are there obviously increases that reliability factor. But the other factor, the likability factor, is something that a lot of managers and leaders overlook. And it's actually quite important from a psychological perspective. So trust is, you know, found to increase whenever you like someone, right? So the more you like someone, the more trust you have. And that's why in sales, they focus a lot on that aspect, right? You actually sell more when you're talking to someone who's got similar backgrounds and they end up liking a little bit more. And in virtual teams, it's a little bit tough to establish likability because you don't get that personal water cooler effect right. Interactions. And so you have to put a concerted effort to actually increase that with your team. And the way you do that is, you know, you basically try to have or mimic the social interactions that happen offline in a physically co-located space. For example, one thing I do with my own teams is every once in a while in our staff calls, I have people share a couple of pictures about their personal life that is unrelated to work. Obviously, it should be something they're comfortable sharing, right? So their hobby, their family pictures, pets, dream vacation, what have you. But something that is completely unrelated to work, because that just increases that level of cohesion among the team. And it creates, you know, in cubicles where you do see people just share, you know, pin-up pictures of their family or pets or what have you, that's missing in a virtual team environment. So those little things actually become the big things when it comes to increasing social cohesion there.
Yeah, and I love that example that you were just sharing, the being able to share pictures a little bit to see someone's life. Because as you said, when we walk into someone's cubicle, you know, just, you know, so everyone listening, think back to some experience. You've walked into someone's office or cubicle before, and you immediately see, well, okay, what books are on the bookshelf, what things are hanging. Oh, they must have kids because there's, you know, crayon drawings on the book. You know, there's a baseball on the desk. He must like baseball. And you immediately get a lot of insights just about the person and what their interests might be, what they do, if they're a family person or not, you know, just from being in that environment. And that's all gone if we're in a virtual environment where we don't have the benefit of seeing that.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of times managers actually push back on that and be mm-hmm. like, well, do I really want to spend, you know, the first few minutes of a call talking about something like that? And they worry about repercussions. But there are a lot of studies that actually show that is where you need to spend a little bit of time. I mean, we do that anyway when we're in a physical co-located space where you spend time and a lot of money sometimes on those team building events, right? You know, outings or what have you. And so those little things, even though it's just a few minutes that get shaved off your call, end up meaning a lot to your team members.
Yeah, that's a good point. I tend to be task-oriented, right? So we can look at the world as either being, you know, you're more task-oriented or you're more relationship-oriented, right? And somewhere on that spectrum. And I tend to be task-oriented. I'm an ISTJ on the Myers-Briggs type indicator thing. And when I've been on virtual meetings and I'm not the leader, I'm perfectly glad to want to cut to the chase. What is it we need to get done and move on and focus on the task? And I had a team leader once who he was really good, and it annoyed me at first for a while, but he was really good at always starting the call with, hey, what did you do over the weekend, right? What's been going on? and just talk about personal things. I'm like, I really don't have time for, you know, hanging out on this call about this. But that is indeed the things that helped the team, as you said, develop this likability issue to help with trust. And when you say likability, I think of rapport also, you know, that we're trying to establish some kind of rapport with each other. And the research I was involved in that you mentioned was looking at the impact of adding webcams to virtual team meetings. And this was, when did we do this research? Like 3 years ago. So webcams are probably more common now, 3 years later, but not so much then. And I kind of expected it to help with the trust dimension that, hey, I can see you. I can get a better feel for who you are. And I can see your environment, right? Because I can see if you're at your cubicle, I can kind of, you know, appreciate things a little bit more. We found that the main driver for trust, and I'm sure there's other factors, but just in what we looked at, was what you talked about, reliability. It was really, if someone makes a commitment, are they going to follow through on that?
Right.
And we thought, you know, if we were going to be developing virtual teams in a more structured way, it would be good to have little hurdles up front, like little things, like, you know, next week, you know, bring back a picture of your dog or something, right?
Right.
A little hurdle that you would enjoy doing, but it helps to build showing others you follow through on what you commit to doing. Fun thing.
That's great.
Yep.
Yeah, great. And by the way, just going back to your comment about the fact that you're very task oriented and with the Myers-Briggs thing, I want to say you're not alone. I mean, a lot of people I talk to in this space are, you know, in that frame of mind. And I am to a certain extent like that, too. However, if you actually look at this as an actual task, meaning spending the first 7 minutes and a half of your call actually talking about things unrelated to work, it kind of shifts the mindset that, hey, this is not completely unrelated to work. It's actually part of building the team and bringing them together. So that just mindset shift actually helps a lot in terms of how you can approach certain meetings going forward.
Yeah, that's a great tip. You know, put it on the checklist of things for
running the agenda.
Yep. That's very good. Okay, let's dive into actually running meetings then. So I know when it comes to managing, leading a virtual team, so for the product managers and innovators listening, when we're involved with our product teams, those product teams might be co-located, we might be physically together. More and more today, they're geographically dispersed. And as you point out, even if we're physically together, we still have a lot of asynchronous communications that don't take place face-to-face. And so there's a lot that goes into managing those teams. They don't have anything to do with the actual team meeting, but we got to start someplace. So I want to focus on the team meeting because I do know so much goodness can occur in those team meetings when they're done well. But it is more challenging when we're talking about, you know, like right now I'm talking to you over Skype, and when we're dealing with technologies that have us physically separated from each other, and sometimes the technology can get in the way itself, it can be more challenging to have an effective virtual team meeting. So if you can walk us through how to have one, that would be great. And I'd like to start with, what should a product manager do before the meeting actually starts to prepare for a good meeting?
Yeah, I'm so glad you actually asked that question, because meetings are actually the second most or second highest time wasters when it comes to virtual teamwork. The first is actually email. And, you know, having attended, gosh, I don't know, maybe 1,000 meetings over my career or something like that, I'm just throwing that number out there. You know, I got to see what works and what doesn't, and when it's effective. I've been in matrix organizations my entire career. So you get a lot of meetings because of that. Meetings with your own staff call, staff team, with your, you know, management, with other teams, with customer teams, and so on and so forth. So, you know, this is a very important subject. But at the same time, I'm sure your everyday innovator listeners out there have also been part of a lot of meetings too.
Sure.
I'm sure this is kind of a boring subject, right? But I've found time and time again that going back to the basics of this is very, very critical. And so, you know, even though what I'm going to kind of share here by talking about what happens, you know, before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting, even though it could sound a little bit elementary, I think it's really important to kind of just perk up your ears and focus on what I'm about to say, because I've seen a lot of you know, hours and man years wasted on meetings where you don't really want to spend there. So, you know, the first absolute thing you need to do before you start the meeting is decide on a need. And there's this, I can't remember who said this phrase, but it is spot on. And that is, just like wars, meetings should be a last resort. Right. So, you know, 7 or 7 out of 10 times, you don't really need a meeting. You can just resolve it in an email or a quick phone call, right?
Sure.
So the first simple question you ask yourself is, do I really need to have this meeting? And if the answer is no, then find some alternative means to actually do that task. The immediate next step after that, which kind of goes hand in hand with the first one, is defining the objective, right? And ask yourself, what is the outcome of this meeting? So, for innovators, for product managers, a lot of times it's, brainstorming on a couple of ideas, right? So the output is just coming up with two or three ideas about X. Sometimes it's a status update. You just want to give an update about where we are on this project, how much money we've spent, resource issues, so on and so forth. And that's okay. But at a minimum, fill in the blank for the following sentence. The objective of this meeting is blank.
Make it real clear.
And just by doing that to yourself and to your team just helps out, everything else down the line. After you define that, the next step is just determining who needs to be on that meeting. So in a lot of situations, you actually have a lot more cooks than you need to on a call where, 70% of those people are not even needed to be on there. But what ends up happening is they affect the meeting negatively in terms of adding their own thought process, where I don't want to say it's unwarranted, but in that specific meeting, if your objective is just an update to your own management chain, having all your direct reports on there and kind of, I don't want to say the word polluting, but it is in a way that your meeting actually ends up being more or a lot less productive and effective.
Right.
So determining who needs to be on that based on the objective is a step there. And then basically drafting a quick agenda is the immediate next step after that. And it doesn't really need to be this fancy document with, timestamps about who needs to talk about what and when. But an agenda is really just a guideline, just a couple of bullet points about what you want to cover, again, with the objective in mind, right? So the overall goal is there. And then the agenda points is, here's, we're going to talk about status report X. We're going to come up with, 15, 20 minutes talking about some brainstorming ideas and so on and so forth. And then the final thing before you have your meeting is just to send out your agenda. Basically say, hey, here's the objective of the meeting. Here's what we're going to be talking about. And if there's anything that you need people to be prepared for before the meeting, either read up on some collateral or, come up with some ideas, make sure you send that and be very specific and send a couple of reminders, because I think everyone has ADD and
right.
No one has time to kind of go through that. So very simple there. Just make sure, to have an effective meeting, reiterate to them that you need them to be prepared so that you have an effective meeting too.
Good. So I was having some flashbacks to some really bad meetings and, feeling a little queasy through this and being reminded of how many times meetings just get put together and the whole planning is, okay, let's go meet in 2 hours and we'll figure this out. And we have these meetings that are really unproductive. They're not focused around a clear objective. You don't have the right people involved. And sometimes the right people, I think there's some CYA going on that you invite more people than you really need to
yes.
either cover yourself or maybe to show that you're actually doing something, right? Being productive in some weird sense. And meetings themselves are not a way to be productive, right? They need to accomplish an objective, and that's what we're trying to get together.
Yep.
And I like that you started out with the focus on that. You need to define why we're getting together and what the objective is. I have a friend at an organization where they made meetings optional. And so by making the meeting optional, you had to do this first work, because if you didn't convince people why they needed to be there, they'd have to show up. Right?
That's a smart way of looking at it.
I really like that idea. It's like, the only reason to have a meeting is we really have something we have to get done together. There's no other better way to do it. So the last resort quote, right? So,
yep.
Great. Okay. So we know that to have an effective meeting, the work actually starts before the meeting itself. So now let's say we're at the meeting. How do we run that? How do we facilitate that meeting?
Great question. And I like the fact that you started with the word facilitate, because the first thing you should do during a meeting is actually have a leader, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because if you don't have a leader, it's again going to fall apart with everyone talking and no one kind of taking charge. And the leader doesn't necessarily have to be the most senior member on the team, right? It could be a facilitator whose main objective is to keep everyone on point regarding the objective and the agenda, right? So if you took the effort to explain what that objective is and what you're going to be talking about, the step during the meeting is making sure you're fully aligned to that objective. Mm-hmm. And as you go through the agenda, you know, opening it up to either brainstorming or that status update, your job as a leader is to make sure everyone stays on topic, right? Any off-tangent discussions should be, you know, I mean, you know, spending a couple of minutes is fine, but if you think you're going to veer off and go off on a tangent, you should definitely put your foot down as that leader and say, hey, let's take this offline. Let's just schedule another meeting to talk about that. But for now, let's focus on what we wanted to accomplish as a team here, right? So that's really the main bread and butter of what you need to do during that meeting. And then, of course, as you go along, capture some form of documentation, right? I mean, meeting minutes, I know some people frown on that. I don't think a lot of people read them anyway. However, a lack of documentation usually means that, again, you're going to end up with an unproductive or ineffective meeting down the line because people forget things, right? So if you came up with a few ideas that you wanted to, you know, capture and make sure that you build on those in your next meeting or your next strategy, then you need to make sure you write that down.
Right.
You know, again, capturing who was there, especially for important decisions that are made, is important. And then any risks, issues, any action items, it's very important to capture those as well. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the meeting, basically just closing out the review, right? So always have around 5 to 10 minutes at the end just to do a wrap up and say, all right, here's what we talked about today. Quick summary of that. Here are the action items. You know, Chad is taking this on. Asana is taking this on. A few of you are going to be doing this by that deadline. And then just, you know, opening it up to any quick questions or concerns before you close it out.
Okay. When it comes to capturing that information, you know, it's a mundane thing a lot of us don't really like to do. And so if there's someone at the meeting that likes to do it, all the better. Yeah. You know, play to our strengths. But a lot of times I've been in any team meeting, actually, any team situation, virtual or not, where we tend to revisit the same decisions or the same information, you know, over time, and not having some source to say, no, we already talked about that. This is what we're doing. And this is why. Oh, that's why. Okay. Now I remember why we decided that, right?
Absolutely. Exactly. You're spot on with that. Yep. And I can empathize with the fact that not a lot of people like to do that. So, you know, keep it brief, keep it high level, but capture right. The main stuff of the meeting.
So now the meeting has taken place. So we had a before meeting, we had a during meeting, we must have an after meeting. What yes. do we do after the meeting occurs?
Yeah, and that's really the shortest part. The first thing you do is just make sure you communicate out your meeting minutes, right? Just kind of give a summary of what has happened, and always, always, always follow up in writing, right? So, you know, one thing I'd like to do is I send an email. Usually I attach the meeting minutes. I do have a template that I use, and it kind of just is pre-filled, and I just copy paste whatever I need to do within that. But I also follow up within the body of the email with a quick summary, right? So, you know, any major things from the meeting minutes for those people who don't have the time to, you know, open an attachment or go through all that for record keeping purposes, just following up with some, you know, high level 4 or 5 bullets saying, mm-hmm. here are the actions that we're going to be taking, or here are the ideas, or here are the decisions that we made, always helps, because having things in writing has an immense amount of power. You know, right. There's this whole deference to authority principle there. So highly, highly recommended that you don't just keep it verbal in terms of your meeting.
You want to be able to look back and say, why did we make the decisions we did make?
Yes.
You mentioned a template. Is that something you'd be willing to share with listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I can send you after this this discussion a link where they can sign up and download a couple of templates. I usually offer those as part of my book, but I'm happy to offer those for free to your listeners.
Thank you for doing that. So Everyday Innovators, I will put that in the show notes to make it easy to find the link to Hassan's resources there. And we all like templates. They save us time. You know, other people have figured out what works and what doesn't, and let's make good use of templates that are working right.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about technology tools. You know, so this is a rapidly evolving space. You know, someone listening to this in 2 years from now might think there's better tools. You know, when we were, my little research team, when we were doing the research with the webcams, and we all know this, we've been on any kind of web conference, even if it's a phone call, the technology itself can sometimes get in the way of the actual team interactions, and it becomes annoying. What tools are you finding that you like right now that are being productive?
Yeah.
Or maybe don't stink more than others do.
Sure. So I'm actually going to send you another link to a blog post that I wrote, which is called The Ultimate List of Virtual Team Technology Tools. And it's an evolving list that I keep updating based on the latest thing.
So if someone hears this in 2 years, they can just still go there and see what's good. Excellent.
Yes, exactly. The last update was June 2016. So it's fairly recent, and I fairly keep it up to date. And the reason why I mentioned that is because, you know, virtual team technology tools can be divided into so many different categories, sure. right? So you've got collaboration tools, you've got project management tools, scheduling tools, communication tools, and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's like a list of around 80 plus tools that I have there. But if I were to pick one tool, and I have to say, full disclosure, I do work for Cisco Systems, so I am a little bit biased. and even though I don't get paid for commission or any sales, I must say that, you know, one of the best tools out there is WebEx. Mm-hmm. For those of you who know it, it's you know, my go-to tool. Like, if I had to pick one tool out of all the, you know, 80 plus tools that I have on my blog, it would definitely be WebEx. The way it's spelled is WebEx. And this is a collaboration tool. So very similar to Skype, but it's like mm-hmm. Skype on steroids. You can do video conferencing. You can do screen sharing. You can actually have that hooked up to your apps on your phone. It calls you back if you're abroad and you need someone to kind of dial in. And it shows who's on the call. You can have up to, like, I don't know, 500 people on a call, and it kind of lights up to see who's talking. Right. You can mute people. It just has some phenomenal, phenomenal features that I absolutely can't live without. I mean, I'm on it for 70% of my day, if not more, with all my team meetings. So I really think that's a very effective tool. If you have a smaller team, Skype works, obviously. There's another competitor called GoToMeeting by Citrix. Mm-hmm. That's also a good tool as well. So those are my go-to for collaboration. Project management, I think Slack is a great one that, you know, you can definitely leverage. And I can go on and on, but mainly, sure. you know, for collaboration, I think having something like WebEx or GoToMeeting should be your default and start with that.
Yeah, and I've done lots of calls in WebEx. That was the tool we used for that virtual team that was doing the research on webcams with virtual teams. We were a virtual team ourselves. It was very interesting. And WebEx was always pretty solid for us, right? And I preface, I may have missed it because I said it kind of under my breath, but which ones stink the least? Because all of these tools, frankly, sometimes let us down. And often, it's not the actual tool, right? You're on the meeting, it's like, I can't hear you anymore. Well, it's probably your interconnection between you and the server, yes. right? It's like, everyone else can hear me. I don't know what to do, right? And it's just those little things that kind of get in the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right. And another thing about tools is that because everything's moving to the cloud, mm-hmm. you've got a lot of those features kind of converging on each other, right? It's very easy for a lot of those companies to just add features and functionality without you having to re-download something. So, in a way, it's becoming more of a commodity, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to differentiate. As long as you go with a brand name company and one that kind of offers solid customer support, then you should be fine.
Yep. Very good. Yeah, and my sweet spot are what you mentioned. You know, it's WebEx, GoToMeeting, Skype for the virtual real-time interaction. Right? Those all right. seem to be pretty reliable. Way back, when was this, late 90s? Microsoft had it was an independent tool. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was the competitor to WebEx. There was WebEx and there was Place something. I don't recall the name.
I don't know yes, and I think I remember. I can't.
Microsoft bought them, and I don't know what it became at Microsoft. I don't remember the name, but it became a really bad tool. And it was so good before. I was really disappointed. So it helped WebEx's market share enormously.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm going to be on my good behavior today and not trash talk another company. but yes, I think it's called Link now. Link.
I think that's the current name. Yeah, it's gone through so many evolutions. So this was late 90s, and anyone that was there knows it became a poor tool. And I'm a big fan of Microsoft, but, you know, they messed this one up. So I'm just calling it like it is. As listeners, though, I always like to get an innovation quote from my guests. And what's the quote that you brought us, and why did you choose that one?
Sure. So the quote I chose is, "There is no elevator to success. You have to take the stairs." And I think that's a quote not just for innovation, but really life in general. Mm-hmm. I think it was Thomas Edison who said, genius is 99% perspiration right. and 1% inspiration. So I really think that, you know, putting in the hard work and avoiding a lot of those, you know, headlines that show overnight success and dismiss years and years of hard work and sweat and tears and blood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really think that in any field, you know, whatever you do, you know, as part of your everyday innovator listeners here, you're not going to get there without putting in the work, right? Everyone around me who I know to be very successful has worked extremely hard at what they do to get to where they are. So I really think that sort of epitomizes life and success in general.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And along the way, taking those steps, it's just there are no shortcuts, right? The overnight success is a fable. It doesn't really exist. When you look at people, there's always the background where they had to figure things out and they made mistakes and they learned from them and, you know, things came together.
Right.
Speaking of Microsoft, you know, even if you look at Bill Gates and say, you know, where did this kid come from that all of a sudden is in charge of the software company? You know, he got his 10,000 hours of programming experience, and by the time he was 18, right? And the 10,000 is that so-called magic number of, you know, it makes you an expert of anything. So everyone, you know, these steps are important, and figuring out what the right steps are useful. And I appreciate your help in helping us, and through the materials you provide, to understand what are the right steps to take in having better virtual teams and interacting with virtual teams. And when it comes to learning more about that, you alluded to your blog a little bit ago. Tell us about the resources that you have and how we can find them.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on my blog, thecouchmanager.com. Everything's actually on there. I do have an about page. And if you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, I do have my handles there. And I also have my email address. If you have any questions or you just like to connect, please feel free to send me an email. It's Hassan@thecouchmanager.com. And I look forward to connecting with you.
Excellent. And I will put all that in show notes also, and your LinkedIn. So Everyday Innovators, if you check out the show notes for this at theeverydayinnovator.com, you'll find links to make all this easy, including the resources you shared earlier that we'll put out there for templates for wrap-ups to meetings and what to share.
Definitely.
Great. Hassan, thank you so much for the time. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Chad.
Thank you for listening and for sharing this podcast with other product managers and innovators. Find the summary of the discussion with Hassan and the full transcript at theeverydayinnovator.com/091. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.